somewhat of its connection to its source has been weakened, so the Alter Rebbe says. Ulefi erech v'chiluke b'chinas habgam b'nefesh. Corresponding to the extent and specific nature of the blemish caused by the sin in the soul and in its source in the supernal worlds. Every sin creates a blemish in the soul and in its source in the supernal worlds. So, relative, corresponding to the blemish, to the nature and the quality of the blemish, are the various purifying processes and cleansing punishments in purgatory or in this world. Because all of the punishments of Torah, I discussed in chapter 8, are not punishments for the sake of revenge. Rather, they are required for the cleansing process of the human soul. And Alter Rebbe discusses in many discourses how the various punishments are essential, a form of therapy for the soul, because when it has been devastated psychologically and emotionally through a sin, it needs therapy to be restored. And that is indeed what the Einshin accomplish, whether in this world or in the future world. For example, some we discussed in chapter 8, what kafakela is, and so forth. We won't get into it. But the point is, every aveira creates another distortion in its personality. So therefore, dependent on the blemish is also the cleansing process which is required to rectify the situation. L'chol avin v'chet einish miyuchat. For each transgression and sin, there is its appropriate punishment. For the purpose of cleansing and removing the stain and the blemish caused by that specific transgression. Similarly, the blemish caused by the sins carrying the penalty of death at the hands of heaven or Karis vary also from one sin to another. Even in Karis and Misa B'Deshamayim, there are various distinctions. There are certain common features. But every Aveira, nevertheless, has its unique character and identity, even in Karis and Misa B'dei Shemayim itself, and certainly in all other Aveiras. And here, the reader, the learner, immediately asks the question, what is going on? In the beginning of the chapter, the Alter Rebbe thundered that every mitzvah is an affirmation of Hashem's unity. Every aveira is an expression of Avodah Zarah. Every aveira is an affirmation, a declaration, a cry out loud against Hashem's unity, like idolatry. Here the Alter Rebbe introduces various distinctions between aveiras. And furthermore, in the beginning, the Alter Rebbe proved that even the differences in the penalties, even the differences if the mitzvahs override life or don't override life, do not express or project anything about their intrinsic value and significance. But here the Alter Rebbe suddenly introduces the distinctions and the differences of the blemishes and the consequences and the impacts of aveiras on the human soul. And here we learn something very significant, which although he alludes to it very briefly here, it's an issue that's discussed in his own discourses and in other discourses in the literature of Chabad Chassidus. Why do we do mitzvahs and why don't we do aveiros? Anyone? Where are you guys from? You ever thought about it? Huh? Okay. So this is a Lebedika Parsha. Yeah, it's the question of questions. Why do it? Why do it? So the truth is, the literature of Yiddishkeit deals with this extensively. And the issue of taimei hamitzvos, of the rationale, of the reasons dictating the performance of mitzvahs and the cautiousness of not engaging in aveiros, how they are defined in Torah, is something that occupies so much of our literature throughout the generations. So you have the Jewish philosophers. The Jewish philosophers have their own system of explaining mitzvahs and averus. First and foremost, the Rambam, in his Moir Nevuchim, in his Guide for the Perplexed, devotes a whole section in this philosophical, monumental work of the Rambam, where he discusses the reasons for mitzvahs and averus. Very interesting reasons that come from the Moir Nevuchim's perspective, which we won't get into at the moment. Rabbi Yehuda Alevi, in his philosophical Kuzari, discusses it. The Ralbag, another great philosopher, Rabbi Levi ben Gershon. The Ikrim, Rabbi Yosef Albo. The Abar Benel, and so on and so forth. The great Jewish philosophers, many, many, have get involved in discussing the value, the significance, the reasons why. Who cares about these mitzvahs? You have Svarim like the Chinuch. Its author is unknown, according to most opinions, Rav Aaron Halevi. The Chinuch discusses all the mitzvahs and gives his reasons. Usually he discusses the ethical value and significance that the mitzvahs introduce into one person, into the Jew's life, and the unethical elements that are various introduced, which is the reason why we should negate them. Then you have Kabbalah. Kabbalah also discusses all the mitzvahs, and there you have a whole other perspective. Kabbalah discusses mitzvahs from a purely mystical point of view. Most notably, the Arizal, Rabbi Yitzchak Luria, the greatest Kabbalist in Jewish history, most probably, who discusses in his Sfarim that were transcribed by his great student, Reb Chaim Vital, the value and significance of mitzvahs, the devastation of averus, and usually it's very much connected to the disruption and the devastation and the mystical energies of the supernal higher worlds and souls. Then you have Musar, the Musar literature, the ethical literature. The Musar literature takes another approach. There, some ethical issues are discussed, and then some of them get really into the punishments. I was listening to a tape the other day of a famous lecturer in Eretz Yisrael today. He was talking to a secular crowd. And he was telling them why they shouldn't do averus, why they should do mitzvahs. And he was describing in vivid colors how Gehenim looks, how purgatory looks. He was describing the various fires that operate in hell, what their bodies and souls are going to be going through after life. It was pretty scary. He did it with humor, so he got away with it. But it was interesting. I was thinking a Perek Chav Dalet that Alter Rebbe doesn't even allude to such an approach. Others discuss, especially today, there's the modern philosophy of mitzvahs. Discuss it from purely a physical perspective. It's simply physically a healthier life. Others discuss it from an emotional perspective, from a psychological perspective, and so forth. What is true and what is untrue? The Alter Rebbe takes it all back to its essence, to its quintessence. And here we again have to understand the point connected to Hashem's unity. There are two levels to Hashem's unity, which he brings out very briefly in chapter 20, from Hashem's perspective and from the world's perspective, which I alluded to in the beginning of this class. Why reality and Hashem's unity, from the Alter Rebbe's point of view, are one and the same? For two reasons. One is defined as Yichud Tata, the lower level of unity. One is Yichud Ilah, the higher level of unity. The lower level of unity, ego, from the Alter Rebbe's point of view, simply doesn't exist. That's a total distortion. It's an errant perception. You push it not in touch with what's going on. If ego is what dictates your life, if that is your fuel, if that is what drives your volitions and consciousness, there's a total distorted perception. Concealment has taken you over. Reality, from the Alter Rebbe's perspective, begins with unity, with the loss of ego, with the loss of an unhealthy ego, which doesn't mean loss of confidence, on the contrary. It means an increase of confidence, real confidence, not based on confidence that's not an existence. That has to be understood. Bittul, self-nullification, is most probably the word, one of the most cardinal axiomatic words in the Alter Rebbe's Shita. Self-nullification, self-abnegation, should never be interpreted as loss of confidence or dignity or pride. Mamish, on the contrary. But in unity itself, there are two levels. The first level of unity, the lower level, we call it lower relative to the higher level of unity. Relative to our condition, it's way up there. If you could live such a life, you're good. You're doing well. So the lower level is where we understand that the world has no reality independent of the divine energy bringing it into existence. The world is not divorced from the speech that creates it, from the Dvar Hashem, from the 10 utterances that bring it into being. And the explanation of this, we discussed then at length in previous Shiurim, in the chapters 20 and 21. The world has no inherent validity or existence. Its properties cannot be identified within the Creator. It's totally new, it's created mamish new, and therefore by definition such a creation has no reality independent of its Creator. Similar to the metaphor of a daydream in your mind, where the properties that occupy the space of your mind, if you're imagining a game, and you're imagining the players and the audience is cheering, and the hot dog stands, and you sitting, and so forth, all of these properties, as vivid and real as they are, have no reality independent of the imaginator, of the thinker, and if one moment you will cease to imagine them, they will cease to exist. And this is true about the entire universe, save for the fact that it's tangible and physical, and it can be felt. And therefore, the world doesn't compromise Hashem's unity, because there's no reality besides Hashem's energy. But that's the lower level of unity. There's a higher level of unity. Take those words and compare them to the intimate self of Hashem. Take two words that you say. The Gemara says that the whole Elam Hazo was created with an Hey. The whole Elam Haba was created through a Yud. Be-yud-kei Hashem Tzurei Lamim Yud-en-kei. The world was created, the Gemara says, in Menachas Chavtas, take two words of your life and compare them to your ability of speech ability. Take those two words and compare them to your thought ability. Take those two words and compare them to the ocean of personality, of emotions and passions and convictions that exist in your soul at every moment. They are absolutely insignificant. It's as if they don't exist. But in the human reality, once you speak, the words have left you. And therefore, they already create and possess a personality of their own. They can be taped, they can be transcribed, and they live now on their own. In Hashem's case, the speech never left the speaker. So the very same relationship that two letters have while they're still included in the intimate self of the speaker, even after the world was actualized and created, they still have that same relationship. So when you compare the world, which is the speech, to Hashem's intimate self, it's not only it doesn't have a reality independent of its Creator. It doesn't have a reality, period. In the lower level of unity, the world doesn't have an egotistical identity, but an identity as an expression of Hashem's identity, of the identity of Hashem's speech, it has. Hence, value and significance is granted to the human personality, to the human development, to the human process, to the human condition. True. Not as an egotistical, autonomous, independent creature divorced from his Creator. From the Alter Rebbe's perspective, identity can only begin being celebrated if it's an expression of the divine identity that's creating that element. But, nevertheless, as an expression of the divine identity, the divine speech, the identity of the divine speech, it's significant and value. It's full of value. However, when we take and we view the world not from the recipient's perspective, but from the speaker's perspective, when we view the world from Hashem's intimate perspective, not only does it not have an egotistical identity, even as an identity, which is an expression of the divine speech, it doesn't have. Here we celebrate Hashem's intimacy, and on that level, kula kameh kalei choshev. The world and all of the universes are as if they're non-existence because the words that create them don't have a real existence. Which doesn't mean that there's no world. There is a world that was created by Hashem and exists, but it therefore doesn't compromise even one iota Hashem, one iota of Hashem's unity. And as we discussed then, in one sentence you could say, in Yehuda Tatan, the lower level of unity, you find yourself within God. In Yehuda Elan, the higher level of unity, you lose yourself within God. Now we come to the issue of mitzvahs and averis. All of the literature that deals with what a mitzvah does to the human condition, with what and how an aveira impacts the human condition, only holds significance and credence in the level of Yehuda Tata. So the Alter Rebbe in these pnakim takes us back to the core of reality. He takes Torah and mitzvahs and he elevates them, he reveals what they are at their quintessence. What the muhus, what the core, what the heart of Torah is. What the essence of mitzvahs are. He traces back reality to its source, to its heart. He takes the world and he removes all of the concealments. And he projects the view of the world as it's seen from Hashem's intimate perspective. And here he says, Torah and mitzvahs is that experience. If we are connected to the essence of reality, so what's the significance of Torah and mitzvahs? One issue. The will and wisdom of Hashem, the intimate will and wisdom of Hashem, versus the violation of Hashem's will. What is the essence of sin in these parakim? The essence of sin is a dysfunctional relationship with reality. There are functional relationships and dysfunctional relationships. And in dysfunctional relationships itself, there are various gradations and levels, and the worst extreme of it is an avera, a total dysfunctional relationship with what's going on. Mitzvahs and Torah is the most functional relationship with reality, which means getting in tune with the intimate self of Hashem. Therefore, the world is defined in terms of Hashem's will versus the antithesis of Hashem's will. Torah and mitzvahs is that level where there's no concealment, so man comes back to the essence of it all. But then Hashem created concealments. And the first concealment separates the speech from the speaker and creates Yehuda Tata. It's not to be compared to other concealments, but it's nevertheless a subtle concealment. And here, mitzvahs and averis take on new significant features. Here the human being emerges. Not an egotistical human being, but an expression of the divine will. So here we begin a new element. And we discuss, in addition to the first dynamic, which is, from the Alter Rebbe's perspective, the core of a mitzvah, versus the core of an aveira, which means a mitzvah is the perpetuation of reality equals Hashem's unity. An aveira is the distortion of reality, which means the distortion of Hashem's unity. Now we have a new element, and that is what the mitzvah and the aveira does to the human being. And here the whole literature of Yiddishkeit emerges. And now again, we spoke before that every philosophy of life comes from a certain level of concealment. The various perspectives and interpretation of mitzvahs and averis are an outgrowth of the various sages, rabbis, and scholars viewing reality and discussing one element of reality. And if it's in the case of the true G'dayli Yisrael, all of the realities that they discussed were true in the evolutionary process from Hashem's will that creates the physical world, they were true. So the Rambam in Meir Nevuchim discusses the value from the mitzvahs and averis as they are to be understood from a certain perception of reality and a certain perception of what the human being is and his significance in the scheme of things and so forth. And the same is true with the other G'dayli Yisrael and so on and so forth. This begins in Yechudat HaTorah. And this is extremely important. And this is part of the process of mitzvahs and averus. What they do for me and what they don't do for me. How a person finds himself or herself in a deeper, more beautiful and splendorous, majestic way through every mitzvah. And on the contrary, how a person alienates himself or herself from themselves and creates a distortion in one's health, psychological, emotional, spiritual, and even physical health. So this is what the Alter Rebbe now discusses. And this, he says, is extremely relevant to La'achar Maisachet, more than to the time of the sin itself. Because in the time of the sin itself, it's like it pales in comparison to the overwhelming issue of affirming Hashem's unity or combating Hashem's unity. But La'achar Maisachet, in addition to everything else, mitzvahs and averis have an impact on our personal lives as individuals. And therefore, rectification and mending has to be introduced relative to that situation. So the Alter Rebbe says here an interesting issue. And therefore, in the Haggai, he pointed out, the various blemishes produce various cleansing processes. And Chassidus therefore comes and explains this element as well. But an Aveira ultimately does something to the soul, every Aveira specifically impacts it in another way, and this does the various Einshim, which as he explains in the Haggar, are essentially a therapy process for the restoration and healing process of a soul, whether in this world or in the future world. So now let's conclude the final piece. So what is the Alter Rebbe saying? If it's an Aveira that entails Karis and Misabadei Shamayim, and here he doesn't get into the details and the ramifications, but generally speaking, here the divine soul itself has been severely impacted to the extent that it was cut off from its source. So now restoration occurs only by a very intense tshuva, which can help for all of Averis, which has to rebuild the divine soul, which has to create the connection of the 613 wires once again. Now when we say the divine soul was totally cut off, he's talking about the conscious elements of the soul. There is a subconscious connection which always exists. But here he's talking about the conscious connection. But if it's not those Averis, so the divine soul was affected, and what happens after the Avera, although at that time the animal soul and the body have all become partners in the perpetuation of Avodah Zarah, have all become partners in the disruption of Hashem's holiness, which means Hashem's unity. They have all become partners in a reality which is not only not bespeaking its truth, but is combating its truth. Nevertheless, he says, afterwards, they ascend a little bit from this klipa. No, he says, they ascend from this klipa of Avodah Zarah, and they become closer to the sanctity of the divine soul, which believes in Hashem's unity, and even in the midst of the sin, remained loyal to its unity, to Hashem's unity, even at that moment. Rak Shahai, so let's continue. We'll finish the next few lines. Rak Shahai, so bebchinis galus mamish, toich nefesh abahamis misitrach. But at that time of the sin, the divine soul was in a state of total exile in the animal soul, which derives its energy from Sitra Achra, Hamachtiya Saguf, which causes the body to sin, and drags it. What it? It drags the divine soul down with itself to the lowest depths, to the Imkesha'il, Lamata Mata. tachas tumas hasitra achro klipas avayda zara Hashem yishmerenu, so low that it becomes even lower than the impurity of the sitra achra and the klipa of idolatry. May God preserve us. So the nefesh of Bahamas takes the divine soul and drags it down under the worse than the klipa of sitra achra and avayda zara. Like the Alter Rebbe explained before, they don't violate Hashem's will. They obscure Hashem's will. They don't violate it. In Aveira, the person becomes even on a lower level where he violates Hashem's will. There is no greater exile than this exile of the divine soul being dragged down to the lowest depths. May igre ramechuli. Using the expression of our sages, may igre ramel bira mikta. From a lofty roof to a deep pit. May igre rama from the peak of a mountain to the lowest depths. O kamesha kas of la'el, for as explained earlier in chapter 2, the shayresh mumakir nefashis kol beis Yisrael, that the source and the root of all Jewish souls, who mechach meila, comes from the divine wisdom, v'hu yizbarich v'chachmasa yachad v'chuli, and Hashem and His wisdom are one and the same, which means that since the soul comes from Hashem's wisdom, the soul is mamish one with Hashem, as He used the term chelek elekami mal mamish. So when a human being takes that soul and engages with the energy and identity of that soul in an act, in a thought, and in a word which violates Hashem's will, is v'hu k'mashal. It is comparable to a situation where ha'eiches b'roishay shel melech, someone seizes the head of the king, umayridai lamata, and drags it down, v'toymein pon of b'seich beis hakisei malei tzaya, and dips the face of the king in a privy full of filth, in a beis hakise full of human waste. She'ein lecha elbein gadol mizeh. This is the ultimate in humiliation. There is no humiliation which is greater than this elbein. Afilu oisakein lefisha. Even if he does it only for a moment. This is not just a remote conceptual metaphor, but the klipos and sitra achra are called vomit and filth, as is known. And therefore, doing this to the divine soul is actually taking the head of the king and placing it in such a place of kitsaya, which is the characterization of klipa and sitra achra. What is the Alter Rebbe saying? He is describing what a person has to understand and comprehend when he engages, God forbid, in an aver. We are usually so indifferent and apathetic to our own souls, we sometimes don't even know that it exists. But what is the Alter Rebbe introducing here? He says, imagine the situation. The divine soul of a Jew is sacred, it's holy, it's the purest of the pure. It's one with Hashem. It's a projection of Hashem's intimate self. Therefore it can be defined as Reishay Shel Melech. It's not just the king, it's the head of the king. Chachmasa Yizbarach. It's one with Hashem. And this soul exists in every Jew. When a Jew, God forbid, engages in an act, in a word, and in a thought that is totally antithetical and at odds with the personality, with the vision, with the yearning, with the passion of the soul, which is a projection of Hashem. When he engages in such an act, he doesn't differentiate between his animal and divine soul. When you do something, you're there in your totality. There's no, the divine soul doesn't exist in China and the animal soul in New York. They're intertwined, they're interconnected, they're both existing in one body. The divine soul is enclosed within the animal and biological soul. So the animal soul dictates, entices the human being to engage in a certain act, and therefore he or she engages in that act with their body. The divine soul now became a partner in that act. What the human being did then He took the head of the kink. He took the face of the kink. He took the essence of majesty, of aristocracy, of regality and royalty. And he placed it and he dragged it down and he dumped it. As the Alter Rebbe described, in the most filthy of locations. So someone will say, no! It's only lefisha, it's only momentary, because afterwards, he says that the animal soul rises back up again. So the Alter Rebbe says, Ozayin lefisha, momentary, do it momentary. Take the essence of aristocracy, and just for a moment, put it in that place. That's what life is. So someone says, this aveira I only do once a month. No. This thing I only do once a week, only once a day. You're taking the face of your own king. You're taking the essence of your majesty. Mistreating it in such a way. Imagine, God forbid, this is a metaphor that's given in a Sefer of Chassidus. You take the finger of a child, of an innocent, beautiful child, and you place it in burning fire. You watch someone do it. What would be your response? If you have somewhat of human sensitivity, you'll shout. A little baby is screaming and shouting from pain. What do you want from a poor little innocent finger? When a Jew says a lie, when a Jew cheats, when a Jew utters a sheker, he takes a pure, innocent, majestic, regal child, which is sacred, which is beautiful, and is placing it in fire, and no one utters a sound. We're not only bodies, we're not only corporal bodies, we have souls, we have nefesh elikis. There's an interpretation. The Shem Shmuel interprets the words of Yehuda to Yosef. When Yosef takes Binyamin into captivity, and he doesn't want to let Binyamin go back to Eretz Yisrael with the other Shvatim. So Yehuda says, Eich elel avi v'anar einenu iti. How can I ascend to my father when my child is not here with me? V'nafshay, he says earlier, v'nafshay k'shura b'nafshay, his soul is intertwined with his soul. Yehuda represents the Jew. He says, Eich, he talks to Yosef, who looks like the viceroy of Egypt, which symbolizes metaphorically the Jew who is involved within the Egyptian culture and so forth. Yehuda turns to Yosef and says, Eich el elavi, how can I go up to my father, v'hanar einenu iti, the little child in me? The neshama is called an inner little child, the little boy, the inner boy. In me is not with me. It has been alienated. It has been devastated. It has been abused. How can I go up to my father? B'nafshay k'shura b'nafshay. Hu v'chachmasa yechad. His soul is intertwined with his soul. V'asher apanim hatas. He brings it concerning another issue. You know, Shabbos is a time that we go back to our father. All week, we're entrenched in the physical, materialistic, egotistical world. Shabbos is an island in time. It's a transcendental oasis where the Jew goes back to the Father. So, you know, a lot of Jews, you want to come into Shabbos and you want to feel the splendorous ambiance of Shabbos. If you insulted another Jew that week, won't work. Your soul is abused. It can't experience freedom if it's not healed. Eich el el avi. Abba, avi is chachma. Chachma is called kaidish, he said in Perikites. Shabbos is kaidish. Eich el el avi. How can I experience Shabbos v'hanar einenu iti if the neshama was abused all week? If a person harmed someone else, if a person was disrespectful, insulted someone else, was abusive to someone else, in any way, or for that case, any type of avera. The nar suffers, the nar was repressed. The nar was robbed from its identity, from its majesty, from its regality. Eich el elavi. And this is what Alter Rebbe brings out. We have to understand what's the gewalt? What's the gewalt of an avera? Nu, lefisha, marash. You have to start listening to the melodies of your soul. And this is why we realize whenever we engage in an Aveira, it's essentially about a cover-up. I don't want to say the next time you engage in an Aveira, but hypothetically, think about the past and you'll see that at that moment you can almost feel it. Depends how strong the shell is. It always entails a cover-up. You're always telling someone when you're about to engage in the Aveda, you're telling a part of you, be quiet now. There's a powerful lust, a powerful impulse, a powerful drive that overtakes you, and you're gravitating towards a certain direction. Your little child will say, this is not the real thing. It's not what you are about. It's not what life is about. And there's the process of saying, telling it to get buried and not to raise its voice. Now here is what klipa does. Klipa means a shell. That's what it is. What it does is, an aveira means it takes you and distances you from your child. It puts you in a shell. In that shell world, this thing is so tempting. But it's really a shell, which means it's a disconnection from yourself. Now, if you would really be able to disconnect from yourself, it wouldn't be such a tragedy. Furthermore, if you would be able to take the divine soul and make it a partner in the Aveira, it wouldn't either be a tragedy. In other words, if the divine soul would lose its faith in Hashem's unity during the Aveira, no! It's a tragedy, but it's nicht gefährlich. You had free choice. You influenced it to become a partner in sin. It's celebrating sin. The tragedy is something else. Haisa ba'amna ita yizbarach. At the moment the human being was doing this, there's a part of him that's screaming, Nain! This is not true. It's not true to yourself. It's not true to your God. It's not true to your people. It's not true to reality, for heaven's sake. It's not true from any cheshbon. It's untrue. This is false. It's a denial of the cardinal principle of a reality, unity. Achdus Hashem. It's me'igre ramal biramik, that you didn't leave the mountain. You took the peak of the mountain and you brought it down into the pit. And while you're in the pit, there is a peak of a mountain in that pit. You didn't become a peasant. If an aveir would mean you became a peasant, no. It's an aristocrat. You're a reish reishal melech. You're an aristocrat. You're a king that finds himself in a pit of filth. Is there a greater humiliation than this? When Yehuda says this, Yosef couldn't contain himself anymore. He couldn't contain himself anymore. When Yehuda evoked the Nar, I can't go without Binyamin. So even the most powerful shells that the Egyptian culture represents are vanished and are reduced to total insignificance. So this is the conclusion of the Perek. That concerning the chet itself, they all have the common denominator of Avodah Zarah. After the Maisa HaChet, if there is no Karas, then after the chet, the Nefesh HaBahamas will come back a little bit to the Nefesh HaLukis. And this is one of the reasons why, usually, 10 minutes after you do it, you don't feel good. Why not? What happened? And here is another thing where you see it, by the way. You know what Aveiras strive on? Their chief partner and component is swiftness. Act fast, act swift. When you have a temptation to do something negative, tell the temptation, wait 5 minutes. It'll never work. No, now. Why? What's the rush? What's the rush? What's going to happen in 5 minutes? Reflection is the biggest enemy of klipa. Because reflection means thinking what's true and what's right. Temptation thrives on swiftness, on impulse, on compulsiveness. Because if it's confronted with a message, it loses its ground. Its power is in the instantaneous, glaring flare that it projects. Because it knows that if you, in 5 minutes, the soul can start talking. The Nar can speak up. The Rosh Hashanah will speak up, and that's dangerous. So it says right now, what's going to happen in 5 minutes? Was it starving? So you engage in it right now, and then 5 minutes later you regret it. Or 10 seconds later. Then tomorrow we do it again. And we regret it again. And then the next day we do it again, and we regret it again. And that's the story of our life. And it's lefisha, l'chayit, it's lefisha. It flourishes on swiftness. Next time it comes, ask it, why is it so swift? Wait a moment. Because it thrives on being a shell, on being a husk, on concealing what's going on. The nefesh ha-lekis is being abused and devastated. That's the fact. When a person does something wrong, we are fighting our own anatomy, our own spiritual and psychological anatomy. A person cannot be happy that way. And what type of ourself? It's a Reish Shel Melech. But afterwards, the Nefesh HaBahamis, they get into the slumber, and then they come back a little bit. So here a person usually has this sense of regret, if it's not such a severe thing like Karis. So they come back to the Kedusha of the Nefesh HaLekis, which has been exiled, but the Kedusha still remains. The sanctity still remains. If it's Karis, it's a deeper sanctity that's relegated to the subconscious layers of the soul, so usually there's no regret afterwards. And now the person has to mend himself in a deeper way. But the bottom line is that the Kedusha of the Nefesh HaLekis, the Reish Shel Melech, is there. And therefore we have to treat it that way. Have a wonderful week.
Rabbi Jacobson delivers this weekly class on the Tanya at Heichal Menachem in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn, New York. To order additional tapes or albums, please call Heichal Menachem at 718-633-1076.